Welcome to Tales from the Top Shelf, the show that lifts the lid on New Zealand's distilling magic. I'm Susie from NZ Top Shelf, your guide to the flavours, the people and the inspiration behind our top local spirits. We'll hear what drives these distillers to create their signature blends and maybe discover a new favourite along the way. So whether you're a gin lover or a whiskey wizard, join us on the ride and always keep it classy and drink responsibly. Kia ora and welcome to Tales from the Top Shelf. I'm Susie Carrick from the NZ Spirit Guide, and today we're heading to just south of Auckland, to the quietly stunning whiskey haven of Pokeno. Now, this website is a must visit, so do yourself a favour. It's less of a scroll and more of a slow exhale, the kind of digital space that feels like a good dram in hand. But behind the calm, there is some seriously thoughtful whiskey making going on. Founded by the passionate team behind the brand, Matt, Celine, and their crew are crafting single malt whiskey with a strong sense of place, using local water, carefully sourced grains, and something quite special, their very own cooperage on site. Today, we're diving into the story behind Pokeno whiskey, the flavor in a glass, and why making barrels in-house is a bit of a game changer. Welcome, Matt.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Now, behind every great distillery, there's a story that starts well before the first drop was made. So take us back to where what you and Celine were doing before Pokeno Whiskey and how those paths eventually led into the world of whiskey.
Yeah, I think behind every distillery is normally a story of stupidity, because once you're in there, it's like, why did I do that? I've been in the whiskey industry for 30 years now. So most of my life has been involved in whiskey, a lot of it in the old world, a lot of it in Scotland. And Celine's kind of worked closely with me in the different companies we've either owned or managed or created and started, etc. And I think for us, it was very much, we moved to New Zealand as a family in 2012. And my brother had been over here for 20 years already. And it wasn't an intentional move. It was kind of, let's come over 6 months. He was getting married. The kids, a bit of an adventure. That's happy days, etc. And we kind of never made it out, like it happens to a lot of people. And I think for me, we'd owned cask businesses. We'd owned whiskey brands. We'd run distilleries. We'd never actually built a distillery from scratch. I think it was probably the itch was going, okay, I've never done one from start to finish. Why don't we do one from start to finish? And it was kind of at that time I was going, yeah, okay, I'm only 40, early 40s. I've got another project in me. And it's like, oh God, what have I done?
So let's talk about that moment it became real. You know, what was it that sort of sparked it and went, okay, we're actually going to do this, but why in Pokeno?
Why in Pokeno? I mean, to be honest with you, there wasn't a deliberate decision at the start. We're going to go and build a distillery in Pokeno. That wasn't what it was all about. We were living in Auckland at the time. The kids were going to school in Auckland, and we kind of went, we don't want to drive much more than an hour and a half to the distillery. So let's have a look. The water was always going to be the kind of decisive factor. So let's have a good look around an hour and a half radius of Auckland. Let's see where we can find some water. We looked north, we looked south, we looked east, we looked west, etc. And it just happened that one day we were driving into Pokeno and we kind of drive. At that time, there were about 500 people. It was tiny. And we kind of drove into this tiny little industrial estate behind. We saw a dairy and we saw a pure spring water kind of thing. And we went, wonder where they're getting their water from. So knocked on the door. I went, where do you get your water from? And they went, we've got a source down here. And we went, okay. And it kind of went from there. The water was great for distilling. It was rich in iron. It's rich in manganese. It's great for the fruity whiskies we want to make. And that's where it started from. It was kind of, okay, cool. Let's do it in Pokeno. And then kind of everybody went, I suppose that was a little bit of a nod and a wink on my side. It was kind of, everybody goes, well, Pokeno, what they got in Pokeno? They've got ice cream and they've got a bit of bacon, that's all kind of thing. And it's like, everybody's going, it's not the sexiest place in New Zealand. I went, hold on a second, this is a real cool little place, a real cool little town. And so we decided to own it, which is why the brand is Pokeno, why it's in big on the box. And we went, we're going to own this. So we're proud of where we are. We're proud. The whole point of the distillery is being proud of your provenance, and we're very proud of our provenance. So went for it.
Right, yeah, that sort of leads into my next question. There is a real sense of intention behind everything that you do, from the water source to the wood. What's been your guiding philosophy when you sort of first set out?
It's two words, no compromise. And there really is no compromise in anything we do. And that was from the choice of the site, from the design of the distillery, the build on the distillery, the design of the process, the choice of the personnel, the choice of the raw materials, the choice of the bottles, the corks, the cap, whatever we do, it's about no compromise in any part of the process. We want to make the best whiskey we possibly can. I mean, it was interesting. I was looking at your website kind of the other day, and you look at all the whiskey distilleries. We are the only dedicated whiskey distillery in New Zealand. We're the only people who only specialize in whiskey, and that for me is really important. We don't want to dilute our capacities, our knowledge, our focus. We want to be fully focused on making the best single malt whiskey we possibly can, and that was the whole ethos right from the start.
Okay, so the New Zealand whiskey scene is still sort of, I guess, carving out its global identity.
The total New Zealand whiskey scene is still the size of a small Scottish whiskey distillery. So
Yeah.
we're definitely still carving out our scene.
Where did you see the opportunity for Pokeno to stand apart?
I don't know if it's I don't know if it's the opportunity for Pokeno standing apart. I think there's a lot of kind of cool little distilleries in New Zealand doing a lot of cool stuff, and that's really important. And yeah, we're still finding our way. Each distiller is still finding our way, but there's a lot of kind of good people out there doing things properly, and that's really important. So I don't know if it's we wanted to stand apart. We just wanted to do it our way, and our way was not necessarily the easy way. Our way was it was no compromise in the process. It was looking at how we can really kind of reflect and make a whiskey that is a true reflection of our culture and our climate. We're not making a Scotch whiskey in New Zealand. We want to let our maturation climate go. We want to use the natural raw materials. We want to give that New Zealand twist to products if we possibly can. And that was where that was always our kind of the way we wanted to do it. And there's other people doing things differently. That doesn't mean they're better or they're worse. It's just the way we decided to do stuff.
Yeah, okay. Now, your whiskey is often described as rich, approachable, and distinctly New Zealand. How do you translate your environment into that flavor?
I think there's a number of things. I mean, the first is the maturation. I mean, Pōkeno, if you've ever driven down the State Highway 1 into Pōkeno, you kind of go over the hills into Jurassic Park down below kind of thing. It's this sea of mist that you can't even see the village kind of thing. So I think, we're in this humid valley almost below sea level. We've got crazy levels of humidity. It's fantastic for the maturation of the whiskies, and we're just letting it go. We've got our steel sheds. We're not air conditioning them. We're not temperature controlling them. We're just letting that go, and that's why we've got an angel share at 9.5% per year, which is nuts. So that's obviously a reflection of the maturation climate. What we're trying to do as much as possible, though, is we're also trying to use local touches. So whether it's in our winter malt, we've got Manuka smoke malt, we've got chocolate roasted malt that very few people have used before. We're doing experiments with Manuka honey casks. We've got the native New Zealand woods. We've got all of this kind of stuff, which for me adds a kiwi twist to the product. And of course, all of our ingredients are locally sourced. The barley is 100% New Zealand.
And that leads into my next question also. Let's talk about the ingredients. How important is it for you to source the locally, and how does that sort of shape the final spirit?
It's vital. I mean, the world whiskey category today is small compared to the Scotch whiskey category or the Japanese whiskey category. It's growing, but the consumer who's going to buy a New Zealand whiskey, who's going to buy a Taiwanese whiskey, who's going to go and buy an Israeli whiskey, what wants the story of provenance? Wants those local ingredients, the locally sourced story, etc. So for me, it was unimaginable to use any barley or any ingredients which weren't New Zealand. We're making New Zealand whiskey.
Right, now there's a lot of patience that goes into whiskey making. What has been some of the most rewarding or surprising moments watching your spirits mature?
It really has been a journey to discover. I mean, even though I'd had 25 years of the industry before we started, I had no idea how it was how making whiskey making in New Zealand was gonna pan out. Okay. You know, everything we do, you know, the water temperatures that we use for our condensers, our chilling, etc., they're at temperatures we've never experienced in Scotland. So it's kind of how do you manage that? This crazy maturation climate, the levels of humidity, all of this kind of stuff which is going on. You every day is a school day. Every day we're learning something new. Probably the biggest surprise out of everything for me was the incredible fruitiness we can get from our whiskies. And I think that's to do with the raw material as well. You know, the barley which is grown in New Zealand, although it's the same barley strain, Laureate, which they use in Scotland, it's a barley which is a lot sweeter. And so for a start, we're starting with a sweeter raw material than we'd do in Scotland. And that's because of our climate. So right from the start, you've got all of these differences that you're working with. But for me, probably the biggest surprise was the maturation. I mean, I never expected 9.5% per year. That definitely wasn't built into the business plan.
Now let's talk about something I'm especially curious about. I first learned about this about 3 years ago when I first tried your whiskey at the Wellington Home Show. And this is incredibly rare, but you have your own in-house cooperage in the distillery. What led you to do that?
I think for me it was always part of the dream. It was going, if we're going to say there's no compromise, we're going to make the most New Zealand product we ever can. Well, part of that was going, have we the possibility of making the barrels out of native New Zealand wood? I mean, how cool would that be, kind of thing? So it was always at the back of my head that I wanted to try this. That was whole part as well, pushing to when we were going to write the regulations were going to say aged in wooden casks, not aged in oak casks like they do in Scotland, to give us that ability to kind of do that little bit of experimentation. Obviously, you know, there's a whole lot of barriers and hoops we had to jump through. I mean, you know, native New Zealand wood, you can't go and cut a tree down. It's protected. You need which woods are going to work with whiskey, which woods can you actually make barrels out of. Can I actually convince a cooper to emigrate to New Zealand? Do I really want to build a cooperage? All of those things. But I think, yeah, this no compromise approach made us that we did. We're very fortunate to have Mike, a master cooper, who does a fantastic job for us. And for me, it was all part of the story. You know, having everything on site from barrel to bottle is awesome.
Yeah, absolutely. And my understanding, this is the only cooperage in New Zealand.
It is, yeah, it is, which is cool.
Okay. That's very exciting. Okay, now, for those who love whiskey, you may not realize just how much the barrel influences the spirit. I mean, first off, it comes out of the still clear. So to get the color into it, it needs to go into the barrels. What difference does it make crafting your own casks?
It's surprising. I mean, we did this in a very Kiwi way at the start, is that, you know, about 5 years ago, we go, okay, well, how are we going to work out what woods could actually work with whiskey? Because this isn't a marketing exercise. Again, it's this no compromise approach. So it has to add something to the product if we're going to do it. So we went and got like 20 different kind of native New Zealand woods, and we cut them into chunks, and we toasted and charred them on the barbecue. And then we threw them into 5-litre containers with new make spirit for 6 months. And then, you know, 6 months, and we go, oh God, let's have a look at some of these native New Zealand woods. And some of them were absolutely disgusting. Behutagawa, don't go there. But you kind of got, then, you know, there was three or four that really stood out of being, hey, this is really interesting. This is really cool. And so then we went through this process of kind of, okay, can we actually source the wood? Can we make barrels out of them? How do you work the native wood? Because working a wood like Torthera, for example, is completely different from working with oak. Oak's quite a soft wood. Torthera's a very hard wood. So we need to steam it for a lot longer before you can bend it into a barrel. There's all these kind of things which make it a lot more challenging. But what's really cool is that you get flavors that you don't expect in a whiskey, because we're so used to drinking whiskies aged in oak casks. An oak cask brings you that vanillin, that caramels, those butterscotches that everybody's used to in the kind of the Scotch whiskies, etc. And, you know, Torthera brings you notes of creamy coconut, lychee, and stuff that you wouldn't expect. Cowrie was even crazier. You know, they do the bitter lemon, the cowrie gums, etc. And the rest of it. And for me, that's really interesting. Yeah, it's kind of you like it or you don't like it, but they are the most New Zealand products we could ever make, which is cool.
Absolutely. Now, yeah, and so that leads into does having that level of control open up more room for experimentation and innovation into new releases?
It does, yeah. And we're looking at some cool stuff at the moment. I mean, I mentioned before, we're looking at Manuka honey casks, and yeah, where we're actually taking our barrels and we're giving them to honey producers. We're letting them season it with the honey. They're emptying the honey out. We're taking the barrels back. Can we play around with that? We've got other native New Zealand woods, which are coming up in the next kind of couple of years that we're kind of working on at the moment. So we're constantly looking to see, it's not innovation for the sake of innovation. It's not innovation for marketing. It's what can we do which adds something to the product, adds something to our New Zealand story? And if we can find something, then that's cool. I mean, anything like that goes into our exploration series. For the time being, there have only ever been 3 exploration series products, and there has to be something pretty special to get into there. So yeah, we're very protective of that as well.
Yeah, and I guess that's something that New Zealand's getting known for, is obviously with their spirits, is the different botanicals in the gin, and then obviously the different timbers that can be used for the barrels.
Yeah, that's right. It's cool. And I think, you know, at the end of the day, we've always, you know, Kiwis always batted above their weights and this kind of thing. There's always that number 8 wire attitude as well. Mm-hmm. I think innovation is part of our makeup, and that's cool.
Absolutely. Now, can you go through, you've touched on the different classifications as far as dealing with the wood. Can you actually tell us, you know, what the whisky classifications are in New Zealand?
Yeah, I mean, at the moment, there's no actual kind of legislation as such. We've written a set of whisky rules. The process for moving that into legislation is complicated, and it takes a long time, and you need attention from the politicians to get there. But the rules are basically, now, we wanted to write the rules in a way that it made us credible to the outside world, because we obviously had a lot of respect for the old world, but also left the room for a little bit of kind of interpretation and experimentation as well. So, I mean, the basics of the rules is that we have to distill in copper pot stills. It has to be distilled for single malt in a single distillery. It has to be aged for a minimum of 2 years in a wooden cask, and it has to be bottled in New Zealand. So they're the kind of basic rules. We let a bit more flexibility in the wider world. It's 3 years, but with our faster maturation, 2 years made sense, like Australia.
Right. Yeah, I was going to ask, so how does that compare to the rest of the world?
Yeah, so Scotland typically is 3 years. Japan is typically 3 years. I think America's 2 years, Australia's 2 years. So it depends on the region.
And does that come down to a little bit of our temperature and the vast temperature that the maturation happens a lot?
Yeah, I mean, clearly we're maturing. If you compare the, you know, evaporation rates in Scotland, which are sitting at 1.5-2% per year, and you compare to, you know, North Island and New Zealand, where we're sitting at between 9-10%, we're maturing 5 times quicker than in Scotland. So for us, age statement becomes challenging. You know, by the time we get to 10, 12 years old, there's going to be very little left in the barrel. It also doesn't necessarily equate to the product being better. You know, if you've drunk an old Scotch whiskey at the age of 25 or 30 years old, it can take on a lot of tannins from the wood. It can actually lose some of that kind of cool character that it had through the new make spirit in the earlier years. We're getting that at the age of potentially 7 years old or 8 years old. So for us, potentially age is not even a favor. I think that's where the big divide becomes between new world whiskey and old world whiskey. You know, it's not a question of is age good? Is age good in the country where it's made? Now, in Scotland, with the maturation climate, a 2-3-year-old whiskey would not be great. You know, in a country like New Zealand, in a country like Taiwan, in a country like India, where those climatic conditions are real good for quick maturation, then, you know, a 3-5-year-old whiskey is absolutely awesome.
Right. So just to give people a basic understanding, it's because we get the temperature changes, the wood expands and contracts.
It's actually the liquid. Yeah, it's the liquid in the barrel. So what happens through changes in temperature, changes in high and low pressure, changes in humidity, and that liquid will expand in the barrel. It'll push up against the sides of the wood. It'll soak in the tannins, the colors, the flavors, and then it will retract. So in a cold country, which has got kind of it's not really a case of, you know, is it very cold, is it very hot? It's more the fluctuations in temperature. So the more fluctuations there are in temperature, atmospheric pressure and humidity, the more exchange you're going to have with the barrel, the quicker you're going to have that maturation. Because basically that activity of expansion and dilation is creating heat. That heat is creating kind of evaporation. And that's the angel's share. So as simple as that.
Very, very interesting. Right now, as you look into the future, what excites you most? Are there any sort of new releases or directions that you can share with us? You touched on a few.
Yeah, I mean, I've talked about a few already. I think as far as we're concerned, there's a couple of cool things coming out later this year, which I can't actually talk about yet, but that's we're excited about. I think we just want to keep on what we're doing. We want to keep on making the best whiskey we possibly can, which is a representation of our culture and our climate. We're getting a lot of support locally in New Zealand, which is awesome. It's really, really cool. And we're really, really kind of proud and humbled by. People are enjoying, drinking our New Zealand products, which is cool.
Absolutely. And your distillery is open for tours?
Distillery is open for tours. Pop along and see us. We're very welcoming. The door is always open.
Well, if you're driving south of Auckland, then it's definitely a stop.
That's it. You can get your ice cream and bacon at the same time.
Yeah. Ice cream, bacon and whiskey.
Great. That's it. What else do you need?
All right, Matt, let's set the scene. It's the end of the working week. Your tools are down. What's your go-to Pocono pour and how do you like to enjoy it?
I drink my whiskey neater on the rocks. So it's like the way I've always enjoyed it. For me, it's going to depend. If it's an after dinner dram, it's going to be a winter malt every day of the week. That chocolate, that smoke, which I really enjoy. If it's going to be before dinner aperitif, it's probably an Alchemy at the moment. It's my preferred go-to.
It's certainly is delicious. Right now, like a good whiskey that somehow disappears a little too quickly, it's time for us to go. It's been such a pleasure exploring the story behind Pocono whiskey, from your deep respect to the ingredients and process, to the incredible craftsmanship of having a cooperage right there on site. It's clear there is heart, patience, and a real sense of place in every bottle. So thank you, Matt, for joining me today. Right now, if you'd like to get your hands on a bottle of Pocono whiskey, head to nzspiritguide.com to just explore and buy direct. And for those of you out there that have already had a Pocono dram, go and rate and review it at nzspiritguide.com and let us know what you think. Your thoughts help others discover their next favorite pour. Until next time, support local, buy direct, drink responsibly, and keep your top shelf full of stories. That's a wrap on this episode of Tales from the Top Shelf. We hope you've enjoyed this peek into the craft and creativity behind New Zealand's distilling scene. As always, sip slow, enjoy responsibly, and don't forget to support our incredible local spirit makers. I'm Susie from NZ Top Shelf. Catch you next time for more Behind the Bar stories.
This program was produced at Coast Access Radio with the support of New Zealand On Air.